Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Quick word here for Advantage BMW in Midtown. That's where you get into a luxury vehicle. I've leased, I bought from Advantage. The BMW, the drive's not like no other. It is the ultimate driving machine. The thing that I like at Advantage BMW Midtown, though, is the customer service. They'll take you right into customer service through sales, service, finance. It can be done very easy. Getting a 3, 5, 7 series, you can get that hometown advantage at Advantage BMW Midtown, AdvantageBMWHouston.com. And with that, we bring on Houston Dynamo goalkeeper Marko Maric. And Marko, thank you very much, as always, for coming on the program. We appreciate it.
No problem.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the last match. And, you know, we always talk about how comfortable you are now with sort of this second-year team under Tab Ramos, your second year in the league. In your second year, after getting a year under your belt, what have you realized maybe a little bit clearer in this league and MLS and how it's played?
For me, the first year is tough in every league, in every new country. You have to know how the league is working on what your level you're playing. And I came like from Norway, so it's a lower league than MLS. So it was, for me, just a year to, of course, show myself that I belong here and I can play in MLS, and just to show that the team can trust me as a new player, and just to task myself every game, like to a good level, and to be honest, enjoy it, because we played the first game against Galaxy and then the second against Kansas, and this was for me also something, one of the best feelings, like when you play in front of these stadiums. And I mean, like, you need time. Everybody needs time when you come in new, and I took the time for me and worked on myself and tried to be the best version of me in this year.
Now, you said this is a bigger league than Norway. In what way? Tell me what is different from playing in the Norwegian first division, and focus in on the things that make this to you a higher quality league.
I mean, there are more eyes, I think, on you, especially from the public, and you play against players what you played on FIFA, like Higuain and stuff like that, Matuidi, and these are world-class players, and you don't have this in every league. So these are challenges, and this is like appreciation to play against these guys, but it's a step forward for everybody, especially also around it, the stadiums, the traveling, everything. You feel like a professional football player, and this makes the difference, and this is why I came here.
Marko, what about the fact now that we're seeing so many pressing teams in Major League Soccer? I mean, the norm is every game, usually, you've got teams that are going to press as much as they possibly can to most teams. Does that really make you on alert a little bit more? I mean, you got to really be focused because the ball can turn over very quickly these days.
I mean, I think we can say that the football is getting faster and faster every year. And you have teams who still sit in the back and play on counterattacks. But this is why we do the video analysis before the games, and you know what's coming on you. So you focus on the most simple things. And then the goalkeeper is there to save the balls. So I'm more worried to save the ball than to kick the ball away or whatever has happened. But it's also new for a goalkeeper. The goalkeeper developed in the last 10 years a lot. And it's nothing more different, just a different type of play. And you get focused on what you have to do each game. And that's it, to be honest.
Houston Dynamo goalkeeper Marko Maric joining us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. Let's talk a little bit about the new rules, and now goalkeepers have to play with their feet maybe even a little bit more. Do you enjoy that? Does that make it more fun? But it is also an additional responsibility, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, everybody thinks so. The game against Colorado, and I did a mistake on the third goal, and that's something where people say, like, they can say, like, he's shit on the feet, he's this, he's that, but it's a different way of responsibility when you get the ball on your feet, because you get the trust of your team that you can play off in the back. And it's something what connects you more to your team during the game. So you are like 90 minutes on your toes because you can get every second the ball back. It's just, for me, it's just the appreciation to see goalkeepers who are comfortable on the field is not on a high level. I think like the people are not appreciating goalkeepers who can play, because it, on some goalkeepers it looks easier. Like a Neuer, this looks like he's a computer, but it's not that easy, because this is not really our job, but it's something what was putting into our position. So I think it is fun, because you challenge yourself, right foot, left foot, seeing this, seeing that. Like me as a player, I also look at my midfield player, like what they are seeing, how I can develop myself. So it's interesting. I think it's nice to have it, and it's fun.
Evolution of the position, and you're right in the middle of it. Manuel Neuer, is he one of your favorites?
Yeah, you have a lot today. You have so many good goalkeepers, and the goalkeepers are developing. I think the generations after me and the youngest generation, they will be crazy. I think there's so many technology today and all this stuff on YouTube, and the goalkeeper coaches are getting better and better. So I think in the future, it will be more Manuel Neuer than now.
Talking to Marco Maric, when you saw Alisson come forward and score off his head for Liverpool, tell me your reaction to that, because that was an incredible moment, very emotional too, with his father and everything.
Yeah, I think for me, Alisson is one of my, I would say, favorite goalkeepers, not only as a goalkeeper. I think he's a very good person. I think one of the biggest points to be a good person. And of course, it's a dream for every goalkeeper to have this dream to score once in your life. And when the team needs me, let's say, and I can score, I would be very happy. But I was happy for him, and it was a perfect moment for his season.
Would you want to go forward in a moment like that? I can see you at the near post getting on a header.
Listen, I saw now a couple of goalkeepers who scored. So before that, I was like, what should I do there? If my striker can't score, why should I score? But now, you know, you never know when the luck is there and you score suddenly. So I would be happy with that.
Now, what about from the delivery of crosses and the types of plays that you see coming from MLS teams? Is that different than what you saw in Europe? Is there any tendencies there that you see? You know, do teams cross the ball earlier? Do they like to get it to the end line? I know there's a bit of everything, but is there anything that's a little bit different that you had to adjust to?
I would say, for me, when I came from Norway, Norway is a very hard league. They play an old school type of football, I would say like a championship football in England. And there was a lot of crosses on corners. There was 5-6 players around you, and they didn't let you come out and stuff like that. So I was lucky that I played in this league, because I learned also there in some new stuff what I didn't saw in Poland or in Austria where I played. But you have in every team there, 2, 3, 4 guys who have an unbelievable foot. So they cross free kicks different, they shoot free kicks different, corners and everything. But that's why the sessions are here, and we try to train on the best way, close similar to the games, and to try to train every week on the crosses and free kicks and stuff like that, just to get the eyes focused on it and see the balls, the distance and stuff like that, you know what I mean? Like when you have to come out and this and that, and when you have to catch and punch. But the level is high. Like I said, the MLS, in every team, there are 5-6 players who are really good, you know, and you have to be aware of them.
Talking to Marco Maric, goalkeeper for the Houston Dynamo, ahead of Sporting Kansas City. After year one, and you've got an excellent goalkeeper coach in Paul Rogers, after year one, was there anything specifically he zoomed in on with you that you really worked on prior to year two here?
Yeah, I mean, nobody's perfect. Everybody has to develop himself and getting better on the weaknesses. And, of course, there was some stuff what he wanted to improve in myself, and some stuff what I saw I have to improve. So we are very open about it, and I'm open to him if I say, like, this is something what I have to train more. And of course, I cannot forget that also Mike Nelson and Kyle Morton and Logan, three other goalkeepers. So we try to get the best out of everybody. And I'm open when I say this and this, and he says, I want to work on that and that, and you need to work on that and that, and we do that and try to make me or make us the best versions of ourselves.
Anything specific you can talk about, you would want to talk about, or is that something you prefer not to?
On everything. Yeah. Is it the easiest catch or the easiest punch? You have to work on everything. And that's, I would say, all-round sessions, the whole weeks and the whole year.
Second half, you had a spectacular save that you pushed over the crossbar. Tell me a little bit about that play and how that occurred, because that ball was hit so hard, it was almost hard to detect that you touched it, and then we realized that on the replay.
In that moment when I saw him, I said to just myself, I will wait, and if he scores, I don't know, in the right top corner or something, or left top corner, what can I do? I just did what I could stop. And luckily, he shot in a position where I could get my hands up. And I think on type of situation like that, the best is just not to gamble, just to wait for the ball and make the player nervous. Because this is also important to make the strikers nervous. If you show them something, then it's easy job for them. But, you know, sometimes luck have to come with you. So this is also important.
All right, you're a big guy. Sometimes on the broadcast, they say, well, Marco makes the goal look very, very small to shooters. How much is intimidation and confidence and command of a penalty area? How much of that is important for a goalkeeper?
I think with confidence and
the way you carry yourself.
Yes, like how you show yourself. I think you're not allowed, I think from my perspective, not to show fear. Like you are there and you're unbeatable. Doesn't matter who you are, you're unbeatable. If they score, well done for them. I think this is a big part, especially on one against one. When you are big and tall in front of them, and I mean, sometimes they get scared, sometimes they trick you, but you have to be fearless.
Marco, you make saves in differing ways. Sometimes you help a ball over the crossbar. Sometimes you got to go low. Sometimes you got to fly into a corner. Sometimes it's a one-on-one. Is there a specific save that, for some reason, just makes you feel better than the other? Is it stopping a guy in a one-on-one situation? Is it going low to pick one out of the corner? What's the favorite type of save that you like to make?
Everyone. Until I can stop the ball, I don't care how, it's my favorite save. But for me, the most difficult save, it's not really a save, it's a straight shot to your hands, who is coming from 25, 30 yards. And it looks so easy, but this is the most difficult save, because it can happen that you're like, yeah, that's an easy catch, and then suddenly something can happen. I think this is, for me, the most difficult shot you can face, a straight shot to your hands. Because the other ones is just for pictures, you know. This is beautiful, but the real saves are the easiest saves are the most difficult saves.
Marco, last one before I get you go. How do you like Houston now that things are loosening up a little bit? You've probably been able to see a little bit more around the city. How do you like the city itself?
It's good. It's like I said in the start, I felt welcome straight away, and I can say that Houston have one of the best restaurants. This is all, like, I am enjoying the restaurants in Houston, and enjoying especially the weather. This year is for me beautiful. Last year was very hot. This year is nice. Houston have a lot of stuff. I just hope that my family can come over and show them Houston on the way I saw it.
Yeah, me too. I hope that happens for you soon. Marco, thank you very much for coming on the show. As always, best of luck against Sporting Kansas City.
Thank you very much.
All right, he's Marco Maric, brought to you by FM Kitchen and Bar. That's a great play for craft cocktails. Get over to FM Kitchen and Bar, because it's sometimes tough to get good food along with craft cocktails. They have it. They got a great patio outdoors. They are also dog friendly. It's FM Kitchen and Bar. Marco, thank you again for coming on the program.
Thank you. Have a good day.
We'll take a break. Why we laughed it up, I'm wise enough, who knows?
How it goes, give me honey. ESPN 97.5.
Hi, I'm Brad Keselowski, driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang. If there's one thing I've learned after years on the track, it's that having the right amount of pressure in your tires can make or break performance. Properly inflated tires are essential to the health of your car and to keep you driving safely. Check your tire pressure once a month, especially before road trips, or stop by your neighborhood tire retailer for help.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
Love getting prices that are lower than low on food that's fresher than fresh? Then shop at Kroger. We give you more ways to save on the fresh you love with tools like the Kroger app, where you can find personalized coupons on top of weekly sales, giving you prices that are lower than the everyday low. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Get more ways to save at the buy five or more, save $1 each sale. Just buy five or more participating items and save $1 each with card. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Patrick Creighton for 5 Under Golf Center, Southeast Texas premier entertainment venue. Tuesday is Taco Tuesday. Enjoy $2 tacos and $4 margaritas. And on Wine Down Wednesday, get $10 pizzas all day long and $10 select bottles of wine from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Plus, happy hours always 4 to 7 at 5 Under Golf Center, College Street in Beaumont, just a quarter mile north of I-10. Make your reservations today at 5undergolf.com. That's 5undergolf.com.
Hi guys, I'm Hector Moreno. You're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. And of course, it's always a real treat when you can get Steve Nichol on the program. Of course, you know him from Major League Soccer, coaching the New England Revolution, plus an outstanding career for Scotland and Liverpool. He joins us now, and I'm sure the Liverpool fans in Houston are going to enjoy this interview with Steve. Steve, thank you very much for taking the time to do this.
No problem, Glenn. Always good fun.
Always good fun to see you. I think the last time we were calling some sort of a game up in Bristol. But 32 years ago, you were named the Professional Football Writers Player of the Year as a defender. It took 32 years for another defender to finally be named in Ruben Diaz of Manchester City. And I just kind of wanted to get a few of your thoughts on that, because it is pretty remarkable it's taken that long to kind of give some props to defenders.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward that in today's game particularly, and certainly from when I won it, things started to change as far as how the game was looked upon, as far as the new wave of coaches, players, spectators, supporters. They weren't interested in defending. It was all about attacking. You know, everything was about how do we make things easier for forwards to score goals. So they start changing the rules. You know, you can't pass it back to the goalkeeper because that kills the game, but that makes it tougher on defenders. So everything, ever since I won that award, has been geared towards forwards and goal scoring. And so the fact that Virgil van Dijk almost won it last year and the fact that Ruben Diaz has won it this year kind of tells him that at last people are beginning to understand that, you know what, it's one thing to be scoring goals, but defending is just as important. And Ruben Diaz getting this award tells you that it's important. Would Manchester City have won the Premier League without the signing of Ruben Diaz? I don't think they would have. So I'm glad to see eventually, again, defendants getting a bit of limelight.
ESPN's Steve Nichol joining us now. I really appreciate him being on the show tonight, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. All right, Steve, before we get into Ruben Diaz, I want to take you back to 1989. When you got that award, I mean, was that surprising to people? I mean, what was the reaction? Because, you know, in our country, you know, we just look at a headline. If a guy scored a goal and had an assist and you won 2-1, he's the player of the match. But I'm wondering how that was taken back in 1989.
My recollection would be, and I have the fact that Ruben Diaz won it the way he did, actually kind of, in some ways, it was pretty similar to the way and the reason I won it. Because at the start of the season, our main centre-half and captain, Alan Hansen, got injured. who was centre back, and so we didn't have anybody else to play there. And so I went and played centre back, and you know, we probably should have won the league. We lost it in the last day of the season against Arsenal. But the fact that I went back there and performed the way I did, as Ruben Dias performing the way he did, and that meant that City won it. The way I performed meant that we almost won it. We lost it by one goal. We lost it on goal difference. And so the similarities are there. You know, he changed the fortunes of Manchester City defensively. And I like to think I did the same back in 89 when I went and played centre-back.
And let's face it, when Alan Hansen goes down, there's a lot of eyeballs on you playing that position, no question.
Yeah, well, fortunately, I had played there a few times before with Alan. And so, you know, I wasn't getting thrown into something that I didn't know. But as I said, it turned out great. I can't complain, certainly on a personal level. And I just, listen, for me, I was just playing. When you're playing and when you're doing it, you don't really think about it. I certainly think about it a lot more now that I'm older. And every time this award comes up, somebody will mention it. And then I kind of drift back to what it actually means. Because at the time, it's very difficult to understand what it actually means. Now that I'm a bit of an old geezer, I can look back and I see the great players that have won it. I see Ruben Dias winning it. And I think, well, you know what? If they thought my contribution was that important, as much as somebody like Ruben Dias, then my goodness, what a great honour.
Certainly it is. Steve Nicol joining us here, former Liverpool great, won the PFA player, Writers Player of the Year Award in 1989 as a defender. 32 years later, Ruben Dias of Manchester City has won it. Does he seem mature beyond your years? He does to me when I hear him speak and the way he handles himself, the way he adapted from playing in Portugal to the Premier League. Pretty remarkable stuff.
Yeah, well, I think the key to him, and actually I would suggest the majority of the City players, is that they don't play for themselves. You know, they play for each other. The most important thing is the guy standing next to you. The most important thing is if somebody makes a mistake, you're there to cover. And ultimately, if you're all doing that, that means that if you make a mistake, which Ruben Dias pretty much didn't, then there's somebody else there to cover you. So he's really gone into a culture that made it easy for him to settle straight away, because, you know, the minute he walked on the field, he would understand and he could see that everybody there was there to help him rather than help themselves. And so he just followed on, and he's doing the very same.
Transitional defending the year before was something, you know, we always saw sometimes City getting hit on the counterattack and on the break. It's identified. They bring in Ruben Dias. He becomes the player of the year. What sort of effect did he have on John Stones?
I think the effect that had on John Stones was more probably about talking to him and positioning him when City were going forward. Listen, the best, you know, defending, the best thing to do as a defender is to smell it out before it starts. And to do that, you need to be in good positions when, you know, your teammates are going forward, so that when the ball's coughed up or the ball's lost, you're in a good starting position to defend. And not maybe 20 or 30 yards away where the opposition get ahead of steam up. You know, everybody's running at you 100 miles an hour, and then it's really difficult. Once that steam train gets going, it's tough to stop it. So you're basically stopping any trouble before it begins. And I think that's what Dias has done for Stones. He's talked to him and he's put him in little positions, maybe 3 or 4 yards either further forward, or maybe left or right on occasion, depending on where the opposition are. You know, that's huge. 3 or 4 yards in a game that's moving at such a fast pace is absolutely critical. And so I would suggest that's the biggest thing that Dias has done for Stones, because Stones himself is a great player. He's actually a better defender than we give him credit for, and I think we've seen the best of him, because he's had somebody that's been there to help him. And as I said, that couple of yards wherever it may be, is huge. And so that's my opinion of how Diaz has helped Stones.
The beginning of your answer, I somehow felt like that was maybe a little testimony you once gave to a New England Revolution center back. It just, I heard the coach in you coming out there with the subtle little tips, right?
Yep, Mr. Parkhurst. Yeah, Mr. Parkhurst. He was in charge. When we were going forward, his job was to sort everybody around him. And he was great at that. You know, we played three because of him. And so he was in charge of two either side, whether it was Jay Heaps or Avery John. He was the one that had to talk to them, get them in positions, the sort of positions I'm talking about with Diaz and Stones, so that when we do cough the ball up, then it's easier to defend. So, yeah, I had this conversation with Mr. Parkhurst a few times.
I don't doubt it. And, you know, Steve Nichol joining us, Liverpool New England Revolution coach. You must be very proud of the career Michael Parkhurst had, because you obviously had a very big influence on it. I mean, took it all the way through Atlanta, became a big part of that in front of 50,000, 60,000 people, national team. I mean, that's got to be incredibly – how you know, where do you put that on the scale of satisfying between being a coach and being a player?
Oh, it's absolutely up. There's nothing better than getting a young player and then watching them progress. And you know, at the end of the day, you know, at the end of the day, you have to have a certain mindset, and you have to have certain abilities just to be a professional and just to play the game. After that, you know, you can give players little nuggets. You know, like Parky, I always told Parky, if you're ever outside the width of the goals, then you're in the wrong spot.
Right.
You know, little things like that. Just, and again, that goes back to starting positions as well. You know, if Parky's outside the goals on the left or outside the post on the right, he's in the wrong spot. I need him in the middle. Wherever it is, he needs to be in the middle.
Because you want him where the ball's ultimately going to come, right?
Yeah, I want him there. Well, I'm hoping he doesn't have to touch the ball, because he's the last line. He's, other than the goalie, he's the last line of defense. So I'm trying to get him to organize everybody around them that he doesn't have to touch the ball. Listen, we spoke about Alan Hansen earlier. Alan Hansen could have worn the same jersey for most of the season without bothering to get it washed, because he never had to make a challenge. He never had to do an awful lot, because he was busy either sorting other people out, or he was in the right spot that the ball wouldn't be played into, and into wherever it may be. So it's all about putting fires out before they even start. And Parky was fantastic at that.
So that was part one of Steve Nichol, the former Liverpool star, lifted the European Cup, also coached the New England Revolution, and you can catch him on ESPN. Some great insight from him. Part two will play next Tuesday here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. By the way, 2 o'clock, Champions League final this Saturday. That evening, the Dynamo will be playing Sporting Kansas City. You can catch all the action on Channel 55 with Eddie Robinson and myself. And I would suggest taking in these games at these two spots that support this show. FM Kitchen and Bar, just north of Washington Avenue on Shepherd. Tremendous craft cocktails, tremendous food. And I would also say Hugh O'Connor's out on I-10. Hugh O'Connor's in the Marquee Entertainment Center, a great Irish pub. That's going to be the official home of the Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 European Championships. We're going to be doing live shows out there. We'll be giving away jerseys, tickets, all kinds of great prizes and things. I got a signed Dennis Law shirt as well. All kinds of great stuff out there. So Hugh O'Connor's FM Kitchen and Bar. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up. One more segment to go tonight. It's a good one.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.
Woo-hoo! Hello, people. This is Alexi Lawless, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN.
Big day in Spain today as Villarreal getting the win over Manchester United in penalty kicks. They are the Europa League champions. And there's a lot of connection to this one when it comes to that failed European Super League. This is a city of about 40 to 50,000 people. It is a smaller club, and this was a remarkable win for them as a club, their first big piece of silverware. Congratulations to Unai Emery and Villarreal today, winning in penalty kicks over Manchester United. There's no better guy to go to in Spain when it comes to knowing what's going on. Is Leo Messi staying at Barcelona? Will Ronald Koeman stay at Barcelona? How is the Atletico Madrid winning of La Liga affecting Real Madrid fans and Barcelona fans? Well, there's only one guy to go to, and he's brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. He is the one and only Jordi Sunyer of TV3 in Barcelona, Spain. So, Jordi, what is the overall sentiment now in the country of Spain that Atletico Madrid won the title?
Well, Glenn, as you know, Atletico Madrid is not the friendliest team in Spain because they have always been associated with a brand of football which is not so so attractive, even if I think this season they have deserved the league title because Diego Simeone, which I think we'll agree he's not an attacking coach. He's not an offensive coach. He's more like defensive-minded coach. Has adapted very well to a roster that had, for example, Kieran Trippier, who is a very attacking a fullback, or players like Marcos Llorente, who can adapt to several positions. He has been used as a defender, but can play as a winger or an attacking midfielder. Yet, a roster, I think, slightly different to the philosophy that Simeone has. But Simeone has responded well to that. And his football has been a little more attractive and friendlier to watch that in other seasons. They have been resilient in these times in what we're living in. You have to be resilient in all aspects of life. And Atletico Madrid have been so resilient because they overcame injuries. They overcame the pressure from Real Madrid and Barcelona in several stages of the season. So the feeling, even if nobody cares if they have broken the duopoly Real Madrid-Barcelona, but the feeling is that this was a deserved league title by Atletico Madrid, of course.
He's Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona, Spain, brought to you by DaspitLaw.com. Jordi, how much of the story, and give us the Spanish perspective of Luis Suarez leaving Barcelona, coming to Atletico, winning the title. How much of this is revenge, and what is the Spanish perspective? Because over here in the United States, the first thing we're looking at is, hey, it's a revenge factor. Suarez to Atletico, he's motivated now, and he wants to kind of stick it into the face of Barcelona.
Well, he wants to. He feels it like a revenge. And even after winning the title with Atletico Madrid, he said, I nearly sent a photo with the league trophy to Jose Maria Bartomeu to show him I was able to win titles again. But there are two sides of this story because here in Barcelona, many people, when I say many people, I mean analysts, journalists, understand that Luis Suarez was released by Barcelona because there were not spotting issues that led Barcelona to release Luis Suarez. He ruled, he alongside Messi ruled the dressing room, and the ambience in the dressing room and how the dressing room was being ruled by the players rather than the coach, rather than Setién or Valverde, was an important point of debate to try to explain what happened to Barcelona last season. So in many aspects, it was not a bad decision or a decision difficult to understand to let Suarez go to Atletico Madrid. But of course, in sporting aspects, he's still one of the best strikers in the European game. We all agree with that. And he adapted to what Simeone needed from him because it's such a different style of play. And he did it well. And I understand perfectly, and everybody understands that Luis Suarez feels it like a revenge, but I think we have to understand both sides of the story. Everyone is right. Luis Suarez is right to feel it like a revenge, but I think Barcelona had a reason to take the decision. So
that's Jordi, was Barcelona disrespectful to him, do you think, in the way it went down and the way he left? I mean, it's always very tricky with superstar players when you're moving somebody on and they're not wanted potentially anymore. But did they disrespect him?
It's true that in last times with Bartomeu, but also there are things that are happening this way with the new president, Joan Laporta. Barca has not known at all how to handle these situations. It's normal because it was Ronald Koeman who called Luis Suarez, and of course you cannot know all words of a private telephone conversation. But it seems that Koeman told me he didn't want Suarez, but Koeman was not fully convinced to release Suarez because he was thinking in sporting terms. So it was more a decision by the board, by the José María Bartomeu board. And you can imagine the situation. If you know that the board of directors of a club doesn't want you to keep playing with this club, but send instead the first team coach or the manager to tell you, and they are not able to tell you directly that they don't want you, of course, the player feels outraged. It's absolutely normal. But for example, these days, yesterday, Joan Laporta, new president of Barcelona, had a meeting with Ronald Koeman and told him, you have to give me 15 more days to tell you if you can continue as FC Barcelona coach or not. What does it mean? When you say that to a coach, to a manager like Ronald Koeman, it's easy to think that these 15 days... you use them to try to find an alternative to finally say to Ronald Koeman, hey, I don't want you to continue. I already have a new coach for the team, so you can go. I think that's not the best way to handle this situation. And I agree with you that in the last few years and few months, Barcelona have not been very, very skillful in this kind of situations.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona, joining us courtesy of John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Jordi, will Koeman stay? And is part of this financial? Because I think you mentioned to me before the call that he's got a contract, I think, through 2022.
Has one more year of contract, and if Barcelona release Ronald Koeman, they have to pay around 12 million euros, aid to the coach, and there is also compensation to the Dutch Federation, because as you remember, Koeman came to Barcelona leaving the Dutch national team. According to what we know, not everybody agrees about what has to be done with Ronald Koeman. Joan Laporta, the Barcelona president, wants to release Ronald Koeman. He doesn't want him to stay, as I was telling. But in the sporting area, the sporting directors, Ramon Planas and Mateo Lameng, who's new to Barcelona, has come this season. They don't agree. They think Ronald Koeman can... can go on with this transition. Ronald Koeman has always said he's totally aware that he's undergoing a transition time in Barcelona, and he's eager to collaborate with Barcelona to make this transition to a losing team from a losing team to a winning team again.
He wants to do a Johan Cruyff repeat, right?
Well, not it's, the fairest, it's difficult.
Not the most greatest of comparisons, but he does want to revive Barcelona.
Yeah, of course. Well, if Ronald Koeman wins the same titles and Johan Cruyff won and leave the same legacy, of course it would be extraordinary. But he feels he's able to revive, as you were saying, Barcelona. But Joan Laporta has come to Barcelona wanting to change everything. That's very strange, because when he left FC Barcelona for the first time, the new president, which was Sandro Rosell before José María Bartomeu, took this approach. This was a kind of a revolution and didn't go well, because you have seen what has become Barcelona in the last 7, 8, 9 years. His advisors or people who know Laporta very well, friends of him, told him, don't do the same thing, because if you start a revolution again, you are doing the same things that the others were doing. And this will be an error. But Laporte is very determined to change things from zero. And the feeling is that he doesn't want Koeman because he feels he's kind of a symbol of the last presidency of this last year in Barcelona, and wants to start from scratch. And
so starting from scratch, let me just break in, Jordi. Jordi Sunyer, TV3. I want to remind you who we're talking to in Barcelona, Spain. Does a wonderful, wonderful job of covering the Spanish La Liga. To that point, what's the future of Lionel Messi?
I think he will stay. I think he will stay because the feelings from the first meetings he's had and his entourage have had with Joan Laporta are good, because Joan Laporta wants to keep Messi. He doesn't want to keep Ronald Koeman, but wants to keep Lionel Messi. And, a good project has to be built. That's not that easy because, promises are okay and good words are okay, but Messi has always wanted to have a team around him that helps him winning titles. Lionel Messi's authority is not a verbal one. His authority is explained over on the pitch, even on the training pitch. So, feelings are good. I think everybody in Barcelona think that Messi will finally stay, but he has to have a good team around him. And Joan Laporta says he wants to release up to 15 first-team players.
Wow.
And in the situation, financially speaking, that Barcelona is in, that's not easy. Of course, there's La Masia, there's the players from the B team that have made a fantastic season. That's not that easy. So I think Messi will stay, but we'll have to be we'll have to look very close to the team that Messi has around him to know if he will stay for another season in 2022.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona, Spain, joining us. What about Sergiño Dest? When you talk about if they're going to clean house with the roster and the players, is he one that will stay, and is he one that has impressed playing for Barcelona?
Well, it has been a season of highs and lows for Sergiño, because I remember telling you in the last call that it seemed he had found his role, because with this 3-5-2 that Ronald Koeman was playing, Sergiño was partially released from defensive duties. He's a very attacking fullback, and he really delivered some very good performances around the Copa del Rey final in that stage of the season, and he was praised by the press. But Barcelona has always been this season a team of highs and lows, and Sergiño has decreased a little bit his performances in the last games of the season. So he has not impressed, but he's not in this list I was telling you of players that have to be released or have to be sold. He's very young. It's his first season with Barcelona. He's a good player. He can show good things. He has shown good things this season. I think he must have an opportunity. And I'm sure he can be an important player for Barcelona, because Barcelona needs right backs. It's a position that has been difficult to cover in last seasons in Barcelona. And even if the Brazilian Emerson Royal is going back from his loan to Real Betis, so there will be two fullbacks, two right backs in the team, I think Sergiño can be an important player next season, and I hope so.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona. Jordi, real quick, last thing before we're going to sneak this in. Zinedine Zidane, Real Madrid, coming second to Atletico Madrid. Just give us your thoughts on what the sentiment is from Real Madrid fans in the city of Madrid.
I think Zidane is a good coach. He's a good leader for a team like Real Madrid, for a dressing room like Real Madrid's. In this kind of teams, in this kind of dressing rooms, you don't only need a good coach, you need a good leader. And I think Zinedine Zidane is a good leader. Leadership is not about giving titles to the press, giving bombastic sentences. No, it's he's a silent leader, and I think players appreciate that. But for the fans, for the press who press so much, it's all about the results. And once you finish this season for the first time in 12 years without a title, you know the story. And there was a rumor in Madrid concerning Allegri to be the next coach for Real Madrid. But once it has been known that Antonio Conte won continue as Inter Milan coach, it seems that Antonio Conte will be the next choice for Real Madrid as a coach. Don't you think it's kind of a revival of the Mourinho era, Antonio Conte? Similar characters in some aspects. And you know, the Mourinho era, there's still a kind of nostalgia in Madrid about the Mourinho era. So it can be interesting. But the fact is, I think Zidane won't continue as Real Madrid coach. That's for sure.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3 in Barcelona. You're the best, Jordi. Thanks for calling us. Have a great glass of Albarino on me, and thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you. Have such great wines, you know, here. So it's Albarino. It's another variety, but I'll have a great wine for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Jordi.
Big thank you to Jordi Sunyer in Barcelona, Spain here, wrapping things up. The party will go on in Villarreal tonight. What a win it was for them in penalty kicks over Manchester United. And as always, a big thank you to you for tuning in tonight, our producer, Aaron Raybould. I remind you, hit me up on Twitter and Facebook. Twitter, it's Glenn Davis Soc. Facebook, it's Soccer Matters. And you can get over to Instagram, Glenn Davis Soc, as well. Podcasts again at ESPN975.com. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm are our presenting sponsors. And until next Tuesday night, I'm Glenn Davis on behalf of the firm. Remember, soccer matters.
ESPN 97.5.